Chapter 2. The Chain. It began with a few lights. As a train of the Taggart line rolled toward Philadelphia, a few brilliant, scattered lights appeared in the darkness. They seemed purposeless in the empty plain, yet too powerful to have no purpose. The passengers watched them idly without interest. The black shape of a structure came next, barely visible against the sky, then a big building close to the tracks. The building was dark, and the reflections of the train lights streaked across the solid glass of its walls. An oncoming freight train hid the view, filling the windows with a rushing smear of noise. In a sudden break above the flat cars, the passengers saw distant structures under a faint reddish glow in the sky. The glow moved in irregular spasms, as if the structures were breathing. When the freight train vanished, they saw angular buildings wrapped in coils of steam. The rays of a few strong lights cut straight sheaves through the coils. The steam was red as the sky. The thing that came next did not look like a building, but like a shell of checkered glass enclosing girders, cranes, and trusses in a solid, blinding orange spread of flame. The passengers could not grasp the complexity of what seemed to be a city stretched for miles, active, without sign of human presence. They saw towers that looked like contorted skyscrapers, bridges hanging in midair, and sudden wounds spurting fire from out of solid walls. They saw a line of glowing cylinders moving through the night. The cylinders were red-hot metal. An office building appeared close to the tracks. The big neon sign on its roof lighted the interiors of the coaches as they went by. It said Reardon Steel. A passenger, who was a professor of economics, remarked to his companion, "Of what importance is an individual in the titanic collective achievements of our industrial age?" Another, who was a journalist, made a note for future use in his column. "Hank Reardon is the kind of man who sticks his name on everything he touches. You may from this form your own opinion about the character of Hank Reardon." The train was speeding on into the darkness when a red gasp shot to the sky from behind a long structure. The passengers paid no attention. One more heat of steel being poured was not an event they had been taught to notice. It was the first heat for the first order of Reardon metal. To the men at the tap hole of the furnace inside the mills, the first break of the liquid metal into the open came as a shocking sensation of mourning. The narrow streak pouring through space had the pure white color of sunlight. Black coils of steam were boiling upward, streaked with violent red. Fountains of sparks shot in beating spasms as from broken arteries. The air seemed torn to rags, reflecting a raging flame that was not there, red blotches whirling and running through space, as if not to be contained within a man-made structure, as if about to consume the columns, the girders, the bridges of cranes overhead. But the liquid metal had no aspect of violence. It was a long white curve, with the texture of satin and the friendly radiance of a smile. It flowed obediently through a spout of clay, with two brittle borders to restrain it. It fell through 20 feet of space down into a ladle that held 200 tons. A flow of stars hung above the stream, leaping out of its placid smoothness, looking delicate as lace and innocent as children's sparklers. Only at a closer glance could one notice that the white satin was boiling. Splashes flew out at times and fell to the ground below. They were metal, and cooling while hitting the soil, they burst into flame. 200 tons of metal, which was to be harder than steel, running liquid at a temperature of 4,000 degrees, had the power to annihilate every wall of the structure and every one of the men who worked by the stream. But every inch of its course, every pound of its pressure, and the content of every molecule within it were controlled and made by a conscious intention that had worked upon it for 10 years. Swinging through the darkness of the shed, the red glare kept slashing the face of a man who stood in a distant corner. He stood leaning against a column, watching. The glare cut a moment's wedge across his eyes, which had the color and quality of pale blue ice, then across the black web of the metal column and the ash-blonde strands of his hair, then across the belt of his trench coat and the pockets where he held his hands. His body was tall and gaunt. He had always been too tall for those around him. His face was cut by prominent cheekbones and by a few sharp lines. They were not the lines of age. He had always had them. This had made him look old at 20, and young now at 45. Ever since he could remember, he had been told that his face was ugly, because it was unyielding, and cruel because it was expressionless. It remained expressionless now, as he looked at the metal. He was Hank Reardon. The metal came rising to the top of the ladle and went running over with arrogant prodigality. Then the blinding white trickles turned to glowing brown, and in one more instant they were black icicles of metal starting to crumble off. The slag was crusting in thick brown ridges that looked like the crust of the earth. As the crust grew thicker, a few craters broke open, with the white liquid still boiling within. A man came riding through the air in the cab of a crane overhead. He pulled a lever by the casual movement of one hand. Steel hooks came down on a chain, seized the handles of the ladle, lifted it smoothly like a bucket of milk, and 200 tons of metal went sailing through space toward a row of molds waiting to be filled. Hank Reardon leaned back, closing his eyes. He felt the column trembling with the rumble of the crane. The job was done, he thought. A worker saw him and grinned in understanding, like a fellow accomplice in a great celebration who knew why that tall, blonde figure had had to be present here tonight. Reardon smiled in answer. It was the only salute he had received. Then he started back for his office, once again a figure with an expressionless face. It was late when Hank Reardon left his office that night to walk from his mills to his house. It was a walk of some miles through empty country, but he had felt like doing it, without conscious reason. He walked, keeping one hand in his pocket. His fingers closed about a bracelet. It was made of Reardon metal, in the shape of a chain. His fingers moved, feeling its texture once in a while. It had taken 10 years to make that bracelet. 10 years, he thought, is a long time. The road was dark, edged with trees. Looking up, he could see a few leaves against the stars. The leaves were twisted and dry, ready to fall. There were distant lights in the windows of houses scattered through the countryside, but the lights made the road seem lonelier. He never felt loneliness except when he was happy. He turned once in a while to look back at the red glow of the sky over the mills. He did not think of the 10 years. What remained of them tonight was only a feeling which he could not name, except that it was quiet and solemn. The feeling was a sum, and he did not have to count again the parts that had gone to make it. But the parts unrecalled were there, within the feeling. They were the nights spent at scorching ovens in the research laboratory of the mills, the night spent in the workshop of his home over sheets of paper which he filled with formulas, then tore up in angry failure, the days when the young scientists of the small staff he had chosen to assist him waited for instructions like soldiers ready for a hopeless battle, having exhausted their ingenuity, still willing but silent, with the unspoken sentence hanging in the air, "Mr. Reardon, it can't be done." The meals, interrupted and abandoned at the sudden flash of a new thought, a thought to be pursued at once, to be tried, to be tested, to be worked on for months, and to be discarded as another failure. The moment snatched from conferences, from contracts, from the duties of running the best steel mills in the country, snatched almost guiltily as for a secret love. The one thought held immovably across a span of 10 years, under everything he did and everything he saw. The thought held in his mind when he looked at the buildings of a city, at the track of a railroad, at the light in the windows of a distant farmhouse, at the knife in the hands of a beautiful woman cutting a piece of fruit at a banquet, the thought of a metal alloy that would do more than steel had ever done, a metal that would be to steel what steel had been to iron. The acts of self-racking when he discarded a hope or a sample, not permitting himself to know that he was tired, not giving himself time to feel, driving himself through the ringing torture of not good enough, still not good enough, and going on with no motor save the conviction that it could be done. Then the day when it was done, and its result was called Reardon metal. These were the things that had come to white heat, had melted and fused within him, and their alloy was a strange, quiet feeling that made him smile at the countryside in the darkness and wonder why happiness could hurt.